Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 745 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, and we're going to be continuing with the Thanos Chronology by checking out Daredevil number 106 today. It's actually Daredevil and the Black Widow, as the title was known at the time. This is the second issue of a three-part story arc covering Daredevil's issue 105, 106, and 107. It's very tangentially related to Thanos, the early tales of Thanos that Jim Starlin was telling in the Captain Marvel series. It is a story more about sort of Thanos's reach at the time, how far his influence had spread, the fact that he was basically recruiting minions to do his bidding on Earth. It's also the first time that we really get a good look at Moondragon as a character. And Moondragon, along with Daredevil and Black Widow, are charged with stopping Thanos' minions on Earth. And as far as Thanos actually showing up in the story, I think he's in probably a handful of panels throughout the three different issues. In fact, I don't think he appears at all in the second issue, not even in a flashback panel. But in the interest of being thorough, and because we're using the Thanos chronology, the Thanos reading order that's on the Crushing Crisis website, and this was included, I thought we would go ahead and cover them. I talked in the first episode, or the first episode that covered this story arc, I should say, on last week's reading order, about the fact that it's really kind of a fish out of water story in a lot of ways, because Daredevil and Cosmic does not go together at all. It's not something you think about. Again, he was much more superheroic, or more of a traditional superhero tales, until the classic Frank Miller run, where Miller really leaned into sort of the street level aspect of Daredevil. And ever since then, that's been sort of the area where Daredevil has lived. He's been sort of in his own little corner of the Marvel Universe and less a part of the cosmic type stories. And when you think about some really interesting stories he could have been a part of that were more kind of universe spanning, like Secret Wars, he's not there. He's much more of a dealing with street crime, dealing with, you know, the Kingpin, who technically doesn't have any superpowers himself. And so it's much more grounded storytelling, as opposed to early on in Daredevil, it was a bit more fantastical. It felt a bit more like a superhero comic rather than maybe a crime noir story. But we're certainly seeing here in these issues, in this particular arc, that there have been times where the creative team has tried to integrate Daredevil into the overall Marvel Universe a little more and tell some superhero stories that are a bit more fantastical. So this particular issue is written by Steve Gerber. We have art by Don Heck, inks by Sal Trapani. Colors are by Gio Arusis, and letters are by S. Lefferman. So we saw at the end of last issue that Kerwin Broderick had fired some sort of futuristic weapon or gun at Moondragon, and supposedly she died in Daredevil's arms. And this issue picks up right where that left off. We're still in Moondragon's underwater base, and Kerwin Broderick has activated some sort of scanner or viewing screen, and he's showing Daredevil that he has basically created this creature called Terax, which is linked to the Earth in some way, and he's going to use the power of this lumbering humanoid-like creature to basically take over San Francisco. And Daredevil's trying to understand why this is happening. He's saying, "You're San Francisco's most respected lawyer, and you've murdered this woman. Why?" And Kerwin says, "Well, because like you and Black Widow, she stood between me and my empire. Moondragon was a roadblock for me. But don't mourn her, Daredevil. Rather, watch this screen and observe the monster that Moondragon helped me unwittingly control. He is called Terax, and his power is that of life itself." So as Daredevil turns to the screen, Kerwin Broderick goes on to explain Terax is not the only threat facing the city today. And Broderick is referring to these other minions of his that, again, Moondragon unknowingly or naively, you might say, helped him sort of get under his thumb. And Kerwin says, "Let me show you the others I have at my command. Behold the Dark Messiah. He stalks the streets of San Francisco. He's projecting an impenetrable force field over the city, so it's sealed off from the rest of the world. None can enter, none can leave, and using the power of his mind, everybody within that force field is at my mercy. We also have Ramrod, who even now is running through the streets of San Francisco, crushing any who might resist me, employing his mighty cybernetic form to enforce Broderick's law, my law for my city and my domain. And I've yet to locate my third deputy, Angar the Screamer, but rest assured he's out there on the loose too, under my control, and the city will be mine. And Daredevil, again, he's like, but why? What's the reason for this and for taking Moondragon's life? Like, Daredevil in no way understands. And you also have to remember that as Matt Murdock, he worked for this guy. So you have to imagine if he had any inkling that Broderick was this insane, he would have stopped him a long time ago. So in answer to Daredevil's question about why he's doing this, Broderick responds, well, in a word, my overly emotional friend, power. Right? I've actually virtually ruled San Francisco for years through my law firm, earning the gratitude of its underworld and silencing any so-called public servants through bribes. And a good lawyer soon learns that the law, just like men, they're really a lot alike. They can be bent, they can be manipulated to one's own ends. And I use my law partners, Jason Sloan and Matt Murdock, in that way, even though they never knew it. And then you came along and everything just seemed to go wrong at once. All of a sudden, Matt Murdock wouldn't play my game anymore. He was refusing to argue cases the way that I told him to. And there was tension at the office. And all of a sudden, just as you were on the scene, Daredevil, and you created a battleground on the streets, basically ruining some of my most profitable operations with your do-gooding, the necessity to eliminate you became obvious. But I didn't have any way to do that until I met Moondragon. And the ironic thing is she sought me out based on my reputation, which was obviously impeccable, and she needed an honorable man to help aid her in her missions to protect the Earth from Thanos and from the minions and the recruits that he was searching for and had on this planet to help him conquer Earth, basically. And so at first I didn't believe her. I thought, well, this lady's crazy. But then she showed me this undersea fortress and I heard her story and I realized it was true. She really had come back to Earth from Saturn to fight this Thanos person, whoever he might be. And so I saw my opportunity to use her and her power to destroy you and to further my own ambitions, because once I saw the technology she possessed, I realized I didn't have to be content with sort of ruling the city of San Francisco behind the scenes. With the power that I could gain from her, I could be king of San Francisco, an absolute monarch with absolute power. And so Daredevil, as he lays Moondragon down on the ground, he's thinking, this man is insane. He's utterly insane, but at least he hasn't realized I'm Matt Murdock or that I'm about to end his reign before it begins. So as Kerwin Broderick is sort of reveling in his power and his dreams of conquest of San Francisco, saying, Kerwin the First, King of the Golden Gate, kneel before me, man in red, for after I join with Terax, I'll hold the power of life and death over the very city. And Daredevil springs into action, trying to disarm Broderick, and he says, wrong, your majesty, you're not going to be going to any joining, whatever that is. We'll get you a nice throne in a padded cell, but before Daredevil can subdue him, Kerwin says, no, stay back, I'll fire. And he does indeed fire the weapon, the same weapon he used to kill Moondragon, at Daredevil. And Daredevil crumples to the ground. So he's not actually dead. Kerwin says, a pity he's still alive, but the gun isn't. Apparently there was only one last charge and a weak one at that. But Daredevil has no means of escaping from this place. And I'll kill him later when I return here after the joining with Terax. And that brings us full circle, basically, as we flash back to back to the eerie verdant monster back at Broderick's compound where he was having a dinner party. And we see the one named Terax who is basically attacking the partygoers with the garden. Kerwin Broderick's own garden. He just gestured, and the garden came alive, started growing at an exponential rate, and literally became a jungle. And the humans that are there are wondering, you know, what is he that he could be so powerful? And what's interesting is that Terrax actually responds. So even though he's not joined with Kerwin Broderick at this point, apparently he does have some intelligence, some ability to communicate, and in answer to the human who wonders what is he says, "Is your understanding so pitiful? I'm Terrax. I am he who's of the earth, and at my whim, living things grow or die." And then he basically gives them an example. All of a sudden, the jungle disappears, and one of the police officers that there says, I'm not going to wait for the next jungle to sprout. I'm going to kill this freak of nature before it kills us. And Terrax sort of waves his hand and says, "No, human, you are not. And this is why." And we see this police officer basically crumble to the ground, and he's wondering, what's he doing to me? And in response, Terrax says, "I'm merely terminating you to prove a point," you know, with no thought, motion, or any feeling at all. And again, if Terrax is of the earth, there's some kind of monster manifestation of the earth, there's no reason to think that he actually has any emotions. But he goes on to say, "What I am is the living embodiment of the life force itself. I'm neither good nor evil, and whoever controls me can shape me, but my power over any life form is total. I repeat, total." And as he says that, the police officer collapses to the ground, basically turning to dust, and we see that the news people who are there, Lucretia and Sandy, are there covering this event. And Lucretia says, "Did you see that policeman? He literally grew older before our eyes and then crumbled into dust." And Sandy says, "Yes, but at least the monster seems to be leaving peacefully. Let's see if we can corner Paul Carson, who's another one of the police officers there, or the Black Widow, and kind of get their take on what's happened." So they showed up there looking for Kraven the Hunter and Daredevil. They heard that there was a battle between those two at this dinner party. But obviously when they've arrived there, there's much more than they were expecting. So Lucretia is thinking about the fact that they missed out on Daredevil and Kraven, and she's wondering where they could have gone. But could that monster have done something? She doesn't want to believe it. It almost seems like she has sort of a crush on Daredevil in a way. And as they approach the police officers, Paul Carson says, "Well, you must be having a really good time, basically on the spot reporting for Armageddon." And Lucretia doesn't want to hear it. Apparently there's a history between these two, and she tells him to skip it and wants to know where Daredevil and Kraven are. And Paul Carson's response is, "Well, I wish I knew." And the Black Widow says, "Yeah, they disappeared after Kraven tossed, or Daredevil anyway, disappeared after Kraven tossed him over the cliff. And then Kraven must have escaped during the confusion with Terrax. But we can't let that bother us because we've got bigger problems. If we look at the path that Terrax just took as he left, there's nothing left there. A minute ago, this whole area was alive with grass and trees, and now it's dead. Which means," and Black Widow says, "Yeah, it means that Terrax is absorbing the life energy as he walks, making himself even larger and more powerful. But there's no way of knowing why. I will say at least it gives them a chance to track Terrax, right? It should be pretty easy to track him down if he's leaving that wide of a trail." Meanwhile, in a downtown office of the much-harried police commissioner O'Hara, it's a man trying to cope with the city going mad. He's talking to some scientists on the phone, trying to figure out a way to bust through the force shield. He's extremely frustrated. And he's saying, "God, these intellectuals, they can create bombs, they can make defective space labs, but they can't find a way to get through one lousy force field." When all of a sudden, another of his officers comes in, and he's not real happy to be disturbed, says, "All right, Kowalski, what do you want?" And Kowalski informs him that a telegram just came, and the chief's like, "You're bothering me with a telegram right now? What's going on?" And he said, "Well, it's marked urgent. I thought it was important." And in a way it is, because as the officer inquires if it's about the force field, we see O'Hara crumble it up and say, "No, it's personal. My brother was found dead near his home in Africa, and he asked to have a moment alone." So at that very moment, Daredevil has regained consciousness, and he's sort of surprised to find himself alive. He says, I don't get it. That blast should have finished me, but here I am and I'm not alone. I hear another heartbeat beside me. It's very weak and very slow, but it's the unmistakable heartbeat of Moondragon. Somehow she is still alive. And in a very weakened state, she tells Daredevil that he needs to take her to her Regenesis lab. There's no time to lose. It's just down the corridor. And Daredevil says, can you guide me to this place? Are you strong enough? She says, yes, but hurry and don't be afraid. And so Daredevil lifts her up and tells her, okay, just tell me the way. And he's thinking to himself that Moondragon's basically holding on by a thread. She's using her body control to ration her strength in really tiny doses, which sort of explains how she was able to survive this attack by Broderick at all. Her nervous system instantly reacted, not with panic like most people's would have, but rather in a way to keep herself alive because her body is so disciplined. It fought back instinctively and it saved her life. And from here on out, it's up to Daredevil, and he doesn't want to fail her. Because Daredevil, ever the ladies' man, seems to be fascinated by Moondragon in some way. And as he approaches a certain panel in the wall, the panel slides up, and he says, well, this must be the Regenesis lab that I was looking for. And he thinks of himself as merely just a country boy seeing his first skyscraper. This is what I was talking about before. He himself realizes that he's not a cosmic character. He says, I can't help it. I'm not used to thinking in cosmic terms. This machinery is so light years beyond anything on Earth. And I'm no Reed Richards. I'm really way out of my league here. So he's going to be reliant on Moondragon to kind of guide him through the ability to use this machinery. So he sets Moondragon down on the platform and tells her there's no way that he's going to be able to grasp the use of these machines. And Moondragon says, don't worry, I will guide you through it. Begin with the yellow dial, turn it to, and she can immediately tell something's wrong as Daredevil's shoulders slump. And when she asks him what's wrong, he says, I can't, right? And it's the obvious reason. He's blind. And he tells her so. He says, I can't see colors with my fingertips. I can gauge the heat they absorb, but that takes time for me to figure out what colors are what. And if I make one wrong guess, and Moondragon says, say no more. As weakened as she is, apparently she does have the strength to restore his sight. And she says, it's going to use the last strength I have left of me, but I'm going to do it because basically she needs to, otherwise Daredevil's not going to be able to save her life. So with one hand on her own head and one hand on Daredevil's, she does indeed pass on some sort of power to him, and it's very painful. And Daredevil says, what'd you do to me? It feels like my head is on fire. My radar sense is going black. It's not working. And then all of a sudden, he says, it can't be. It's too incredible. And it's true. Daredevil's able to see. So he asks her to quickly give him the instructions again so that he can save her. And as he goes through and follows her instructions, she begins to glow. And Daredevil's thinking there, the regenerous ray is functioning, but she's so still, so silent. Were we too late? And Moondragon climbs off the platform saying, there's no need to fear. Moondragon lives. And Daredevil says, thank God we were in time. Let me help you down. You must still be very weak. And she says, no need. I'm actually fully recovered. And then I love the next line from Daredevil. He says, then may I just hold you without making excuses? I owe you so much more than I could ever hope to repay. So he's feeling like he owes her. He needs to, hold her and share an intimate moment with her because Moondragon has given him back his sight. Plus, there's the whole thing of this attraction between the two. So Moondragon allows it for just a moment and then says, please, my friend, now is not the time. We have a city to save. Your newfound sight will mean nothing if Terrax destroys all there is to see. And Daredevil's surprised to hear the monster is that powerful. And Moondragon says, well, there may actually be no limit to his power. Come and follow me. And so as they walk through the undersea fortress, unfortunately, the scenes are all the same. And Broderick has basically smashed any piece of equipment that could have been used to stop Terrax. And Moondragon says, yes, apparently he only left the Regenerous lab untouched because he thought it was useless to you and thought I was dead. But any device which might have been used to stop Terex is ruined. But there may be yet one device that he could not have wrecked. And so Daredevil follows Moondragon over. There's what looks to be a simple plastic cylinder. Daredevil says, I don't understand. How can this be used as a weapon? And Moondragon says, well, the answer eludes you because it's too simple after all you've seen. And for us and our foe, this is by far the most important weapon of all. It's the teleport module, our means of escape. So obviously Broderick would have destroyed it if he could have, but then he would have had no way to leave himself, and he wouldn't have had a way to come back and finish off Daredevil as he said that he planned all along. So a mere microsecond later, Moondragon and Daredevil are teleported to the estate of Kerwin Broderick. They reunite with Black Widow and the police there, and they get brought up to speed on Terax being let loose and having left the trail for them to follow with this basically dead zone that he's leaving in his wake. And as they climb into the police car with Paul Carson and head into the city, we see that Lucretia and Sandy, the two news people, are right behind them. Terax continues to lumber toward the city, draining life energy as he passes, drawing it into himself and growing larger and more powerful as he gets nearer the city, nearer the center of the human population of San Francisco, when suddenly he hears a roaring and he thinks perhaps it might be his first opposition. But instead, it's Angar the Screamer and his girlfriend, and Angar saying, I knew that voice in my head was telling me true, and this is the person that I'm supposed to team up with, the guy I have to help. And Janice, his girlfriend, is saying, you're rushing towards something terrible. I can feel it. Please turn back. Forget this madness. And remember, Angar has felt like he suffered from madness. He's felt like he's been insane so many times. And that's the thing he's always trying to convince himself of. I'm sane. And he even responds to Janice here saying, madness, I'm not mad. I'm David Angar. I am sane. And more than that, I'm the Screamer, master of the Mindstorm. I am power. So as he approaches Terax, as he drives his car alongside him, thinking that this is the one that I have to help, this is the one that's going to bring me power, Terax senses that one of the people in the car is a friend and one is a foe. Obviously, Janice being the foe, she has fear of Terax. She doesn't believe that David should be doing this. And so as Terax thinks that the hour of joining is getting close, he's going to take action to protect himself. And so as Angar drives by and calls out, the city is ours, Janice, thanks to him, salute with me. As they pass close to Terax, Terax basically drains the life force from Janice, and she dies there next to Angar, who doesn't even notice. Angar's too busy saluting Terax, but Janice cannot salute or do anything else because she's dead. As Angar continues driving, saying, can you dig it? With him on my side, no enemy can live to defeat me. So in a moment, Angar's going to glance to his right and realize just how true that statement is. Even an enemy, someone who Terax perceives as an enemy, as innocuous and not a threat to Terax at all as Janice, is going to be destroyed by Terax. So meanwhile, Paul Carson, Black Widow, and Daredevil are stuck in traffic, and Daredevil and Black Widow decide to basically leave on foot to try to solve the issues of the traffic jam and of Terax, rather than just sitting in traffic. Meanwhile, Black Widow's trying to understand what's going on, why there's a big traffic jam. She's thinking it must be the Dark Messiah's work or Ramrod or both. And I can't believe that. And she starts to say this is engineered by Matt's, by your senior law partner. But she does correct herself at the last moment and say Matt's senior law partner. And Daredevil says, we can discuss that later. Right now, we need to concentrate on solving this traffic jam and figuring out where Dark Messiah and Ramrod are. So as they leave and they're hopping over cars, Black Widow does say, I couldn't help but notice that relationship between you and Baldi, as she refers to Moondragon, and not to mention how you got your eyesight back. And Daredevil says, well, I couldn't talk about that to you in front of Paul. He's not supposed to know that Daredevil's blind. you know, you sound almost jealous. And Black Widow starts to respond, jealous, don't be silly. All of a sudden, they're both attacked by the Dark Messiah. And Daredevil seems somewhat surprised, and then he realizes, well, I've never actually seen Dark Messiah before, didn't know what he looked like. And through the course of the battle, Daredevil and Black Widow are actually pinned up against a wall, relatively easy by the Dark Messiah, and they're being crushed by his mental powers when Ramrod shows up and says, you're being rescued by Ramrod, but you're only being rescued so that I can kill you myself. So as he tosses them back toward the Dark Messiah, Black Widow says, let's backflip out of the way, and manages to do so. But Daredevil, thrown off by the fact that he has sight rather than radar sense, misjudges, his depth perception is off, and he takes a fist to the face from Dark Messiah relatively easily, as he's realizing this sight is actually becoming a disadvantage to him. And it looks like the Dark Messiah has the upper hand, and he's about to destroy or kill Daredevil when Moondragon shows up and screams out, Mordecai, no, because remember, she was one of the ones who gave the power to the Dark Messiah. And she says, turn, Dark Messiah, meet the one who's truly your maker, and know at last you're saved. And Moondragon uses her powers to reshuffle the literal molecular structure of the Dark Messiah, and he's changed back into the innocent youth he once was. And Moondragon says, yeah, it's a pity that that won't work on Terex or Ramrod. And Matt says, Moondragon, if that's true, and you can't dispose of the other two so easily, I have a favor to ask. You need to make me blind again. And Moondragon says, wait, what? What are you talking about? And he says, without my hybrid senses, I can't function as Daredevil. And what's important now is that we save the city. There are too many lives at stake. And Moondragon says, but what if I can't reverse it again? And he says, it doesn't matter. I got to see what I wanted. I got to see Natasha for once. And I need to do this. And Moondragon says, very well. You will once again be in shadow. But please, Daredevil, recall the sight of me also. So again, just a little clue from Steve Gerber here that there is that mutual attraction between the two. Even to the point that Moondragon, as she takes Matt's sight away from him again, sheds a tear. And it's one of the last images Matt sees, saying, are you crying, girl? And she says, no, it's nothing at all. And he says, are you sure? But then before he can even think more on that, he says, the light's fading, it's gone, but my radar sense is back sharper than ever. And Moondragon acknowledges that. Yes, sharper, I owed you that much. So apparently she's increased his powers a little bit. I don't know if that's ever mentioned or brought up. I've never heard it mentioned before. So Daredevil says, I can tell you don't understand, but thanks, and I mean that. Hang on, Tasha, I'm coming. And Tasha, Black Widow, is still fighting with Ramrod. And Ramrod's kind of laughing. Hang on, he says, ha, when Ramrod's done with you, you won't have nothing to hang on to. And although her widow stings have no effect on Ramrod, she does manage to swing around behind him, kick him in the back of the neck, and say, you know, it's got to be frustrating for a strong man like you, because in order to dismember me, you're going to have to catch me, only I'm not going to let that happen. So Daredevil arrives and manages to trip up Ramrod with the billy club. But before their fight can continue, all of a sudden, the radar sense of Daredevil senses that Broderick and Terax have arrived, and Terax is larger than ever, so large, in fact, he's holding Broderick in the palm of his hand, as Broderick says, look, Terax, it's our heroic friends, and they seem a bit surprised at how large you've actually gotten, and they haven't even noticed the emptiness of your eyes, signifying my total control over you, how your features have become molten in preparation for the joining. And I bet they don't even realize the city has but an hour to live unless I am crowned king of San Francisco. So Daredevil calls out, Broderick, you're man, you're mad. You can't hope to destroy us all. And we get the blurb for next issue, the conclusion featuring the sensational Captain Marvel, and an ending you'll never forget. So it seems now that Broderick has control, or closer to full control, of Terax. Terax himself doesn't speak at all, and we do see that his features do look like they're a bit molten, to use the words that Broderick is using. It seems like there's some sort of liquid. His features have become runny, and what the joining exactly means, we'll see next issue. So the fact that it has Captain Marvel in it and Moondragon, again, it's a much more cosmic tale than Daredevil normally has. And as I mentioned at the top of the episode, no Thanos actually shows up here. This three-story or three-issue arc, rather, does only tie in tangentially, but it does give a little context, give a little of a feel that Thanos's reach on Earth, his influence on Earth, was something that needed to be addressed, and maybe brings a little more climax to the story when we reach the conclusion in the issues of Captain Marvel and Avengers and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual and all that. You know, maybe without this context, you may not have felt like Thanos was as big of a threat as he was. And also, it's probably a way to introduce readers of other titles like Daredevil to what's been going on in the Captain Marvel title. As I mentioned before, it was really picking up in popularity when Jim Starlin took it over. It was in danger of being canceled, was planned. It was planned. The cancellation was already planned, I believe. And Starlin was able to bring it back from the brink. The other thing to remember, as I mentioned before on the Thanos reading order, is the Captain Marvel book at that time was coming out every other month. So that probably gave Starlin time to do guest appearances and to work with other creators. We did see in issue 105 that I covered on last week's Marvel reading order, or Marvel Chronology Thanos reading order, that when it came to the Moondragon pages of her origin, those were actually drawn by Starlin. So it's not so different than what's done today when you cross over one character to another, hoping that by the end of the crossover, you're going to get a reader of one or the other title to now start reading both of them. It's just the strangeness of telling such a cosmic tale that has its roots in space and such with such a street-level character. That's the only thing that just feels a little weird. But the fact that Captain Marvel or Captain Daredevil, the fact that Daredevil himself commented on it, you know, when he's talking about the machines and the Genesis chamber, how, yeah, this is cosmic stuff. This is way beyond me. And so what Daredevil really, you know, we're used to seeing him fight the more street level characters. So seeing him in a story like this is kind of refreshing in a way and a nice change of pace. Obviously, these issues being from, you know, the early 70s, they're a little bit of their time when it comes to the art and the dialogue. I do enjoy the fact that Steve Gerber doesn't go all in with the slang and the kind of the colloquialisms of the time, because that always really dates books, and it hurts when it comes time for them to sort of stand up over time. I think it stands up well enough. It does feel like, you know, a Bronze Age Daredevil story, and that's what it is, but it is a lot of fun also. The art by Don Heck is pretty standard Marvel art for the time. Considering the sort of restrictions of the time in terms of coloring and the, you know, equipment and technology, it's actually done really, really well. The issues I have are from the Marvel Unlimited app, so they've been recolored. And so I can't really speak to what the color would have looked like, because again, these are sort of digitally remastered. So I'm probably not getting like the best version of the original art. But in terms of the technical side of the art, the storytelling, the way that it stands up, it's, you know, yeah, it's Bronze Age Marvel art. It's done well. It doesn't have quite, you know, the detail or the intricate line work that comics of today have. But there's a certain charm to it. There are times when I miss this sort of art, just because, you know, you may not get the dynamic page layouts and panel layouts, but the storytelling is always really good. And you get there's more panels typically on average in a particular issue, and you get more dialogue, which then it gives you I don't want to say a longer read, but a more in-depth read and again, it's partly to do with the art, because the art isn't quite as detailed, it doesn't convey as much of the story. Like nowadays, artists get so intricate and so detailed, you don't need as many words. You don't need as much exposition or dialogue to help tell the story because the art is telling the story. Whereas in these older issues, it's a little more 50-50. Maybe even to the point where it's 60-40, where the words are telling more of the story than the actual art is. So there's a lot to be said for working like this with the traditional style, with these smaller panels. It certainly was a challenge, and by no means is this awful art, but I do find that when people who've sort of grown up and have read comics only since the 2000s, when technology really kind of took over and you see a lot more digital, when they go back and look at this art, I think they don't necessarily have the appreciation for it that they should. So I just want to remind everybody that this was all done traditionally. It was pencils, it was inks, it was colored, you know, all right there, all on paper, much different than the technology of today. So when you go back and look at this art, you need to look at it in terms of how are characters laid out within the panels, how is the storytelling and the transitions from panel to panel. Don't look at as much at the kind of the line work or the coloring, because again, those were things that were much harder to do back then as opposed to these days. So that's going to do it for this episode, the second part of the three-part Daredevil story, crossing over with Thanos and Captain Marvel and Thanos' bid to use the Cosmic Cube to take over the universe. Obviously, next episode we'll be covering the final chapter, Daredevil number 106. So hope you all join us for that one. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.